Welcome to the Deconstruction Podcast. This is the podcast where we seek to deconstruct the narratives that define our lives in order to find the common humanity in all of us. We explore the intersection of psychology, spirituality, and society as a way to try to navigate the current geopolitical climate in a healthy and informed way. Here we also hope to explore the mechanisms of change within ourselves in order to experience life a little more fully. I'm your host, Rachel Spiker. As we begin, I want to invite you to take a moment to pause and tune into your environment. I currently am living on the traditional, unceded, and ancestral territory of the Sioux and Tsleil-Waututh Nations, and I want to slow down in order to honor the people who tended to and cared for this land for thousands of years, and invite you to be more aware of where you are as well. And now, I want to invite you to pull that awareness into yourself, noticing how it is that you are feeling at this moment. I can notice I feel a sense of delight in my chest and warm gratitude to be holding your awareness. However you are arriving, I hope that my voice can be with you throughout the course of this episode. Thank you so much for going on this journey with me. In this episode, we are joined by Davis Wiggs, a therapist based in all over BC offering services through their practice Between the Vines Counseling. With a specialization in sex therapy, he primarily focuses on sex addiction. In this episode, Davis shares how his personal journey from loneliness to connection paved the way for his career in counseling. Together, we delve into the profound impact of loneliness, heightened by the COVID era and the necessity for therapists to engage in their own healing. Exploring the intricate dynamics of therapy, we emphasize trust building, addressing underlying wounds, and the empowering journey of reclaiming one's true identity. Join us today as we navigate the depths of human connection and the transformative power of therapy. Hi, Davis.
Hi.
It's so good to be connecting with you today. I feel really, really excited and curious to see where our conversation takes us.
Yeah, super excited. I'm happy that you reached out to me, and I'm hoping that we can take some of these conversations into some really great, really great depth.
I think it's going to be. Yeah. I'm particularly interested in your expertise and where you've spent a lot of time specializing your craft and focusing your energy. And so I think we're going to be able to go into some deeper places than I've had access to, not having access to your training. So we'll let it unfold.
Definitely. I'm super excited.
Yeah, good. Thank you. So to start off, I would be curious if you could share a little bit for our listeners around what is most alive in you right now. What is it that you're bringing to the world through your craft, through your practice, and through your passion? Mm-hmm. And then if it feels good to share a little bit about the journey that led you into this moment and who Davis is as we get to also see the counselor.
Definitely. Honestly, a lot of stuff is alive in me right now. And I think it's to do with even just the business side of things, because I just started my practice 6 months ago. And it's been really cool to kind of see the process of how I'm able to grow myself as a person and grow myself as, as a business person as well. And I think that right now is, I think it comes with a lot of challenges, but I'm here for, I'm here for the ride. And I want to be able to take some of the things that I know already from, me being as a counselor and put that into practice and being able to interact with people, in a smaller community than coming from a big community, right? And a lot of this started from even in middle school and high school, where I felt a lot of loneliness in high school and middle school. So there was a lot of, hanging out with, when I could hang out with friends, I could, but when I couldn't, I felt hard for me to reach out to people and felt difficult for me to be able to say I want to talk about these things. I want to talk about my feelings and my thoughts around, how I'm feeling about, myself. And I wasn't able to, back when I was, in high school and, being able to kind of just figure things out. Like, it was just so hard for me to reach out to people. And I want to, now that I have my practice, now that I've been a counselor for so long, or I mean, I guess not so long, but 4 years now, I want to be able to help people who are stuck in that place of loneliness. And like, I'm here to be able to have, you know, the talk with them of like, you know, you're not alone. That's been my journey, is like, I want to make people feel that they're not alone with their thoughts, their feelings, their emotions, how they're able to express them. And I've interacted with a lot of clients who have just been in that place, and haven't been able to express it as they have with me.
I'm noticing my heart feels so warm as I'm listening to you bravely share this journey of encountering something painful in yourself. Mm-hmm. And instead of letting that monopolize into more self-destructive or maladaptive ways of coping, you instead made a career out of making sure others don't feel that way, don't feel that loneliness.
Yeah, it's been quite the journey, actually. I've made myself this, you know, I wanted to be able to provide some sort of help, you know, and people say like, oh, like, why did you become a counselor? I was like, well, I want to help people and make them feel like that, you know, that they're not alone in their journey to, you know, a better self. Right. And I think that's all part of my journey, is just creating that warmth for people. So, yeah.
When I think about how I orientate towards the therapeutic mechanisms of change, it really stems from a pretty simplified foundation of, when we're left alone in overwhelming distress, mm-hmm. that's when all of these protective, adaptive, quote unquote, maladaptive behaviors and experiences start to form, or defenses. And so it sounds like you're moving towards something that's so important about undoing this sense of aloneness, and something that I think is profoundly pervasive in society. Yeah. We're disconnected, individualized, lonely, collective.
Right. Yeah. And it's good that you bring that up too, because, you know, even over the last 4 years during, you know, obviously I'm just going to say it, you know, COVID times, right?
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of people who have felt this sense of being alone because of, you know, being stuck indoors, or feeling like that, mm-hmm. you know, like their work takes them to a place of just like, you know, they get to work from home, but they don't really interact with the outer world because of maybe certain things maybe they already had before COVID had come up. And then now that they're feeling this, it's more exacerbated because of being in that place of, you know, being stuck or feeling like they can't reach out to people. And it's just been really interesting to kind of see that process with people. But it's definitely at a very heightened state right now of people feeling that sense of anxiety and depression and aloneness. So,
yeah. Yeah. COVID did not make us healthier, that's for sure. It was a kind of pause, but also a fragmentation of how we knew how to be ourselves in this world collectively as a society when we were suddenly forced indoors. I think I'd be so curious to hear, if it feels good, to share a little bit about your own journey of moving into and through aloneness into creating a career around helping people not feel so alone in themselves. I think as I'm reflecting back on how you and I know each other and the different modes we've intersected throughout the past few years, I'm always seeing you at some sort of community event or in a collective organization or agency, and you're always so, hi, how's it going? I want to connect, kind of energy that makes me feel so included, me feel so seen and less alone. And so hearing you share that, how I get to encounter you actually stemmed from knowing loneliness in yourself, makes me feel so curious of, how did you move through that?
Yeah, a great question, actually. And I love that you're able to expand on that. And I think being able to move through that, I think I at one point just pushed through. And I wasn't healthy, and I know that. And I pushed through because I didn't think anybody would be able to help me. And when I heard of counseling, I was like, oh, you can talk to a professional to, you know, just sit there and talk about your feelings. I didn't know that until I like even got out of high school. And, I think the way that I did it was I just connected with people in the way of not belonging, but trying to fit in. And I think there was that subtle difference there of, you know, I fit into certain places, or I was the third wheel, or, you know, I really wanted to connect with people, but at the same time, I didn't really feel like I belonged, right? It was just more of a sense of like just fitting into a crowd where, you know, we had some similarities, but weren't really connecting on a deeper level. And I always felt like that odd person out. And so being able to kind of see that there's a lot of people out there that are, that experience the same stuff that I do is fascinating to me, because I didn't, you know, in that place of loneliness, you always feel like that you're just, that you don't have the help. But then there's just so many people, you start to recognize there's so many people that do care. And now I have like, you know, a set of group of friends, you know, including yourself, that, you know, that really want to connect with me and really want to see like, you know, you are like telling me you are a good person, and you are like, you provide so much, and like you provide this impact to people that, you know, you don't even know sometimes. And I have to be reminded of that constantly. And I think moving through that sense of loneliness, I'm still moving through it. You know, and as a therapist, I see my own therapist, and, you know, being able to kind of, you know, tell him about, you know, my struggles and my concerns and everything, he's able to kind of, you know, tell me that, you know, this is not, you're not alone. Like, you have family, you have friends, you have, you know, even colleagues that will be able to kind of say like, hey, like, you know, if you need anything, you know, like, whatever it is, like a coffee or something like that. I love when people do that, you know, and it's just like, you know, whatever it is, it's nice to be able to just like have that, just that small connected, you know, thing at the time, right? Like, I think it's nice to just have like just little bits over time, and it makes a huge difference.
I'm feeling so struck by your vulnerability and letting us see the person of Davis that then gets to form who the therapist of Davis is. As I ask about your journey through loneliness, you brought us into how conforming to get these very real needs met of relationship brought you into a sense of disconnection, and moving through that, it sounds like you stepped into authenticity at a deeper level. It's like recognizing conforming or being part of something for the sake of not being alone disconnected you from a deeper sense of who you were. And I think when we move into these experiences that show us or mirror back something about ourselves that can feel like uncomfortable, such as, oh, am I third wheeling? Am I adapting how I know how to be in the world so that these people like me a certain way? When we start to move into those experiences with ourselves, there's this choice point of, yeah, but I need to do it because the other end is so scary of not having this. Or do we get to choose to say, maybe I deserve to feel like I belong, and I'm actually going to pursue that, and I'm going to go into this thing I hear of called counseling, and through that I'm going to start to get different stories mirrored back to me that remind me of the people in my life that see me. And then you allowing people to mirror back that to you as well takes so much courage. And then the little trail crumb of take these little moments of connection for the coffee, from the colleague, from our family, and those start to build up a sense of connection inside ourselves that we can fall back on when we're still feeling lonely, because this human experience is hard.
It is. Yeah. And like, I mean, I think I've always had this, like, I like disconnect from myself in that way. And like, I see myself as more of a person who is trying to seek out that connection and trying to seek out the relationships. But sometimes I fall into this hard place of like, how do I do it without, you know, hurting others? And how do I do it without, you know, and I need to be able to learn. And I have learned over time to just apologize if I have hurt someone in, you know, whatever, like however I connect with people. And even with like, you know, clients as well, and how I connect with them, like, I want to be able to, you know, like if they say like, oh no, that's not true, or like all these things, you know, I want to be able to say like, okay, so then tell me, you know, what's, you know, I guess like where do you feel that disconnect? And that's where I want to be able to help people within that, not even just my clients, but just with everybody around me, you know, and how am I better able to help them throughout the process of connecting with others? Yeah.
There's such a courageous humility I hear in that, of you doing your work and then that translating into your relationships, which then translates into yourself doing the work, which then translates into your relationship, and it becomes this like fractal of growth.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. And it's so cool to see that, you know, and you don't really realize how much it builds over time. You know, and you kind of sit and you're like, huh, well, I really have grown as a person. How do I, you know, how am I able to grow that much more? And that's all part of the journey. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's really is part of the human journey. And I also always feel like this bubbling goodness in my soul when I see therapists doing their own work, as I think that there unfortunately has to be a higher level of expectation that we are showing up for what we're asking our clients to do. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's a hot take. And I think it's hard. And I think that that has to be held in a balancing act of the therapist being allowed to be a complete human with so much, all of the struggles in the world, and still wanting to go journey to those places before they can take others there. So yeah. I'm just feeling so, so struck by your willingness to continually pursue yourself and how that's translating into your practice and your community.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's part of a part I want to strive for is, you know, like you said, like I'm always out there trying to connect with community and trying to build something that I, you know, and I always ask myself, what can I do more of, right? What can I do more and more, you know, and I sometimes I need to take a sit back and go, okay, mm-hmm. Let's just let this pause and see how it translates into the community without, you know, stepping into another thing. And then like, oh my God, I put myself into this whole like gigantic mess. So it's definitely something I need to also like realize in myself is that I'm, you know, I'm me and I need to just kind of like, okay, so let's just wait and see what happens here. If it doesn't work, then let's change it and modify it, you know, and that's just is all part of how I, you know, do things now is that I'm able to see myself as more of a, I guess, like a mature person in that sense of like, I know when to take a step back.
Yeah. What an important lesson to know, especially if I'm thinking back to you talking about what's alive in you right now is business and creating something new outside the wheelhouse of just implementing therapy, how that needs to come with boundaries around where do we put our energy to avoid burnout and not overextend ourselves while also giving enough for it to fuel. And it's something I'm also learning at this time of like, okay, how do we do this in a way that's sustainable?
Yes.
And lets us keep giving.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's even a huge thing right now is there's a lot of people who are giving too much of themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think I even tell my clients is like, so like, you know, tell me where you're at now and tell me where you want to be. Right. And then, you know, see where you can, you know, maybe take two steps back. And if it feels good, take two steps forward. Right. So like just feeling how you are in these moments without just like over, like you said, overextending yourself as a person in that sense of self.
What a beautiful gift to impart to your clients.
Yeah.
So as we've been talking about this arc of encountering loneliness, moving through it to find connection and belonging, mm-hmm. it's making me think of one of your expertise working with sex addiction, mm-hmm. because I actually don't know this is why I'm so excited to have you on the podcast, because this is not my wheelhouse and it's your expertise. But I would intuit that loneliness and disconnection from self and others would play an important part in understanding sex addiction and the role it has in people's lives. And so I'm wondering if there's any connection there and mm-hmm. if that can be an avenue for you to talk and share a little bit about your knowledge in that mm-hmm. realm with us.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess I've been a sex addiction therapist for two years now. That's where I started. I just got certified this last year. And how it ties into, it's been able to, I guess, bring me more insight into how men are in relationships and how like married men are in relationships and everything. And it all ties back to how men aren't able to, in some ways, I feel, can't speak up, you know, about their emotions, the way that they move throughout their life. And even in like a relationship where they have, you know, they're married and they have kids. And I think that's even part of it too, is the fact that, you know, like, I feel like even women, for example, I feel like have more of an emotional connection in themselves that they can, you know, they can go to a therapist and be like, you know, I need help, right? But men feel like they don't they can't really connect in that way when it comes to something like a sex addiction or even even a porn addiction as well. So that's where I have started with my niche, is that I specialize in porn addiction within sex addiction, if that makes sense. A lot of my clients that I work with are dealing with that in particular. And the way that it ties into that, I guess, that loneliness is that, you know, they feel so stuck in that. And that's where they get into that addiction, is that, you know, they have this interpretation of like, you know, if they don't know, you know, like, or if my, you know, if my wife doesn't know, or if anybody doesn't know in my life, then, you know, then it's okay. But then they start to feel this sense of like, even within in themselves, that they just don't know where to go with that. And they like, and that's where they feel lost and lonely, is that they're not able to speak up about, you know, the ways that they, you know, have maybe different ways of having sex and different ways of, you know, what a healthy sex, I guess, you know, what healthy sex looks like. And so that's where I kind of tie in the things with like, even with sex therapy too, is, you know, there's a lot of people who experience, you know, even like in dysfunction within themselves of like, you know, even sexually, like even erectile dysfunction and how they interpret, you know, like sex for themselves. And it just, it really shows that like, you know, there's this disconnect with how men experience sex versus how women experience sex, and how that, you know, even within men, there's a lot of men only really who have like, even most of the time have this sex addiction, you know, and not a lot of women, maybe they don't, maybe there's a lot of women who can't speak about it. But I mean, even with how men speak about it, it's, you know, like keeping secrets. Like that's kind of the main piece that I find, is that like they get lost in this sense of like, not being transparent with the people that are around them, right? And so like when they have this sense of secret, like I guess like these secrets that they keep from themselves or keep from everybody in their life, they start to form into this addiction, you know. And I like to say that, you know, even when we think about an addiction, it's a lot to do with even this dopamine that we have in the brain, right? So like a lot of the dopamine that we experience is a lot of that pleasure center in the brain, and like it's too much pleasure. So they're getting this sense of like, it's just so overwhelming for them. And a lot of things that they experience like in their day-to-day lives, it's like sex is just like this constant wheel that is just constantly turning. And like they go to work thinking about sex. They go to, you know, they go to, you know, they go to events thinking about sex. They go to family things without like thinking about sex. It's all, it like encompasses their whole life. And, you know, over time they get so depressed and lonely and down on themselves that they just, you know, they spiral into this addiction and don't know how to stop. So that's, I guess like that's part of that. But yeah.
I mean, you're saying so much really important information.
Yeah. Sorry. It's a lot of verbal diarrhea. So I apologize.
No, not at all. I think you're bringing us exactly where I was hoping we would go, and in moving into the terrain of what you do and like the niche that you work with. And I would argue niche is probably not an accurate term at all when we think about the population that struggles with this. Like I think we know the numbers around porn addiction are remarkably high, and what isn't high is that there's safety and inclusivity to talk about having this experience. And when I think about the role of addiction, so I'm an addiction expert. I work in addictions, but I don't actually have any expertise with it as a sex addiction. So understanding the nuances and thinking there's like this underlying commonality that when we have impulsive addictive behaviors or urges, that it's meeting a need of some sort. And as I hear you talking about the way that men are conditioned, whether it's societally conditioned away from being allowed to talk about their feelings and feeling that connection, where there seems to be a little more inclusivity and safety for women to feel into that. And the way that that disconnect from their own emotional experience creates the container for secrecy to thrive in. I'm wondering I guess it's kind of two questions. One, what would you work with? How do you work with an individual who's coming presenting this presentation of having a sex addiction where, you know, they're just, it's the forefront of their consciousness. They think about it morning and night, and it kind of creates the screen through which they know how to experience life through having those ruminations. We'll just start there. That's one question.
Okay, definitely. So I guess to answer that question, I usually, if I have a client that comes in with I guess, presenting issues or even talks to me about that kind of stuff, even before the initial consultation with them, they're so, like, you can tell even over the phone or even during the initial consultation that it's so hard for them to even just speak about it to, you know, and I even tell them, like, we're complete strangers. So I understand that there's, you know, that you don't feel the sense of safety or trust yet with me. And then, you know, I want to be able to provide that for them. But at the time, it's just like, you know, it's our first time meeting and like, they're just so like locked with how they're feeling. And like, they just, it's just a wall, you know? So even during some of those consultations I have with people, or like, it's definitely, you find that there's this wall of, you know, this barrier, like, you know, it's so hard to break. And when they come in to see me, you know, I work from a bottom, I guess like a bottom up process. So I don't work specifically with the sex addiction or addiction right away. I work with, you know, doing, you know, I do like an intake with them, and then I kind of expand on more of like a timeline, looking at, you know, their past and their childhood, and maybe there's the trauma in there. And, you know, and a lot of clients who come to see me have trauma, and like, mm-hmm. they have like an extensive background of it, you know. And yeah. I'll say this too, is that like a lot of people who, even at the age of like, just as the age of six, can experience, you know, looking at porn for the first time. Yeah. You know, and so that is something that people take in, that they really don't take into account, is that they have this background of, you know, maybe their dad didn't provide any emotional support or any mental support, or their mom didn't provide any of that support, or they didn't have really those parents at all. And, or they were in the foster system, or they were verbally, you know, verbally, physically, like just abused by, you know, people in their family, and like sexually. And it's just so hard to see that. And that's why I tend to work from the bottom up, because if I work with, I guess for myself, if I work with the sex addiction right away, it really like doesn't really feel like that I'm connecting with them right away. And so that's why I work from that, you know, that state of like, okay, let's get to know you as a person first before I jump right in. And that's where I tend to see most of my clients, is that they really appreciate that I'm able to just like sit with them and just like, let's talk about, you know, how you are presenting right now, but then let's jump back to maybe where they're, you know, maybe where you were in a survival state and didn't know how to, you know, combat that. Yeah.
I love what you're saying, because it prioritizes the human and the relationship, yeah. where if we can just see addiction as a necessary symptom of trying to get needs met, trying to soothe, trying to be okay, we can actually get to the wound. Definitely. So when I'm working with anyone who has like substance use, for example, but it can be watching too much TV, and be eating, it can be scrolling. It's like, this behavior is meeting a need. And so I don't even address the behavior. It's not even about that for so long if we get there. But what we do is we get underneath and be like, oh, what's causing the distress? What's causing the need to soothe and numb out or disconnect in some sort of way? And I hear you being curious about the human in front of you and wanting to know how they formed and what their inner working is, and then offering yourself as a new corrective safe container for relationship and connection. Mm-hmm. And then from that place, beginning to address perhaps the wounds that lead to these impulsive behaviors, but you not centering that feels wise.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. And I think it's definitely something that I think we need to even focus on within addictions. And you know this too, is that like, you know, and so like, if we start with like kind of like pummeling into the, you know, the addiction right away, it's not going to really feel like that they're really heard, you know? And so it's kind of like, you know, they come to see an addiction therapist or come to see somebody who is specialized in that or whoever, and they come into the first session and sometimes you never see the person again. Right. And so then, and there's even a telltale sign that they just weren't really feeling the way that things were going within that, you know, and they, you know, they go off and say, that was a really bad experience, and that I just didn't really feel connected with that person, and so on and so forth.
It's like it sounds like the way you're doing that kind of modality isn't requiring abstinence. And I think that abstinence-based recovery programs from any addiction inevitably lead to a deeper sense of shame and disconnection, because abstinence doesn't work if we're not addressing the wound underneath. It's like, oh, my arm is amputated. here's a Band-Aid and hope that Band-Aid stays on. Oh, the Band-Aid fell off. Now you have to feel shame about that. Now you have to feel disconnection. And now that wound is infected. And so really hearing the way you're able to prioritize connection.
Yeah, definitely.
Over outcome and behavior control.
Yeah. It's because they, you know, they come into a consultation and they're just kind of like, I want to work on this stuff right now. I want to get this done. Yeah. I'm like, okay, so let's take a pause. Let's take a breath. And, you know, this is our first session together. So let's see where this goes. And I think it puts them at ease when I tell them that, you know, the first session is just an intake. That's all it is. You know, I'm asking you questions. You know, if you feel triggered at any point, then we can stop. You know, we can talk about that more. You know, I can start and we can come back. You know, it's being able to just kind of work with them as a person instead of, you know, like if they want to come in and start working on it right away, then, you know, they're not really sometimes really at a place to even telling them sometimes that maybe you're not at that place to be working on it right now, you know, and it really like, and sometimes it hurts to even say that to them, but it's, you need to be able to say that this is, you know, maybe this isn't a time for you to be working on this right now. Maybe we can work on something else that's not what you came in for. Right. And so like even just working with that specific piece and then, you know, and then we'll get to that point. Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Pacing in therapy is a whole.
It's a whole other ball game.
Yeah. It takes such skill and patience and trust the unfolding in your client's nervous system to be able to go at the pace that they can handle. And you being able to guide that balance that's so real of like, here's all my problems, fix them for me now. What do you mean I have to wait? And also recognizing rushing into those can actually be harmful if they're not ready.
Yeah, definitely.
I feel you balancing that well.
Yeah. And it's definitely a process too. Like I find that even trying to balance that, you know, the time with, you know, how much a client is going to be spending with you is, you know, mm-hmm. like how do you even gauge that? Sometimes I don't even know myself, right? You know, like we're both experienced therapists. So like, I mean, sometimes we're just kind of like, you know, like if we go into a client session, we're like, okay, we need to figure out something to do, right? Because then it's just kind of like, you know, it's sometimes it's really hard to gauge how clients are going to be coming in that day, right?
So, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you've been talking a little bit about your work with sex addiction. And mm-hmm. I also know that you're a sex therapist and you just told me, I didn't know this before, but those are two different things, which does make sense. I'm curious mm-hmm. if you can talk a little bit about the modality or the work as a sex therapist and what that looks like in your practice.
Yeah. So I think I even work with clients, like I said, bottom up is the way to go in my eyes. You know, and the way that I work with my clients is definitely like, you know, it's always to start from, you know, like I even have, I guess I'll share some things with like how I talk things about with my clients as well, is that I, you know, like I have a client right now who is wanting to work with me on their, how they have sex with their partner and how they, you know, they want a healthier sex life, mm-hmm. But they don't know how to navigate that. And I think mm-hmm. a lot of that has to do with, you know, finding, you know, like even just like myself, like trying to find like what is good for them to be able to, like, where do you want to start basically? And usually they start with, you know, this is, you know, it comes back all to the, you know, the childhood, right? Like this is how you experienced a healthy sex in your life and how you saw maybe your parents being intimate with each other and how you saw others being intimate with each other. And then how did even social media and, you know, mm-hmm. how did society fit into that as well? Like how even like a lot of my clients who deal with their like a healthy sex, you know, or sense of self, I guess, is the fact they look on social media and it's like, you know, body image is a real thing. Like, you know, the way mm-hmm. that they feel about themselves is a real thing. Like their self image is huge. Like, you know, a lot of, and one of my questions in the intake that I do with them is like, how do you describe your relationship with social media? And a lot of it is like, oh, like I'm like super in depth with just scrolling for days. Right. And even with like the day and age of TikTok now, like TikTok is huge. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of misinformation about, you know, how to interact with each other and how you interact with each other as a person. And even with like, even your sense of self is so, you know, I guess like even hurt by how much people can, I don't know, say that they are able to work on themselves, but not at the same time. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's really hard to see how some people just even do. I've even described it to some people, and I think it's even now called doom scrolling, you know, mm-hmm. like they just scroll for, you know, forever and like look at other people, and they're like, there's a lot of jealousy. There's a lot of comparisons with themselves to other people. And it's, you know, social media has just become this huge thing. And that's why I work with a lot of my clients on, you know, like, how do you perceive yourself as a person instead of looking at, you know, the outer circle, you know, like what can you control in your eyes versus what you can't? Because a lot of the stuff they can't control is how others, you know, maybe others think about them, right? So like, how do you, like, you, what you can control is how you perceive yourself and what your emotions and your feelings and your thoughts, like being able to control that instead of just focusing on, you know, others and what their representation of who they are, what they are, you know, how they experience others around them, right? So like, it's being able to take a step back and being like, so who am I, who's yourself, who's you, right? Like, and that's what I try to play on too, as well, as people get stuck in that a lot. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear you helping individuals come into terms with how their sense of self was formed,
yeah,
and the way that one, social media just impacts how we know to make sense of ourselves and what we think is acceptable, and to some extent, like how we ensure belonging. Mm-hmm. And if I think about like the topic of sex therapy, having to bring porn into that as well, like young individuals being exposed to porn and that being the mm-hmm. template for what sex looks like and the way that shapes how they would know how to show up in sexual relationships. Mm-hmm. I'm curious if you can talk about a little mm-hmm. bit more of the mechanisms of change of how you help your individuals move into a truer sense of capital S self, if that's the goal, to help them reclaim feeling good in themselves and in healthy expression.
Yeah. So I guess like to answer your question, I really want to, I guess in a sense, provide just a sense of comfort for them and knowing that, you know who you are as a person. And I tell my clients that all the time. And I tell people that all the time, is like, you know, so like you just described to me who you are as a person. So what's keeping you from telling that to people and like, you know, saying like, you know, I know who I am. So, you know, in a sense, and this is a really weird thing to say, even as a professional, is like, why, you know, why even care about the other people around you about who you are as a person? You know, you, in some ways, people, I feel like, have to know some of what they know as who they are as a person before they can kind of really, talk to people about who they are, right? Like, and try to connect with people. If you, like, and that's the thing, is that if you don't feel that connectedness with yourself, like, how can you provide that connectedness with other people? Cause then it provides this, like, you know, it, you know, you're in some senses like a, you know, a person who is, you know, you feel like this other person, you don't feel like yourself. You're just trying to, and that all comes back to a sense of, you know, fitting in, right? You know, and I want to be able to, for clients to belong to themselves and belong to their sense of self instead of being disconnected from that and what others tell them. Does that answer that?
I love that answer because I'm like, I hear you saying people's identities are formed outside themselves. So how do you help them reconnect with that? And you're like, I remind them they have it in them.
Yes.
You bring them back to it within themselves. And that almost like undoes this codependency, which is just requiring the external to make us feel okay. And I hear you saying, how do we find that back in? How do we remind ourselves that we have it and we can be connected and we already are? Mm-hmm. All those aspects we're looking. And so I think that's a brilliant answer of you saying that I create a container for them to remember who mm-hmm. they are and connect with that.
Yeah. And you like, you know, this too, is just, it's a lot of being curious. Like it's definitely like, I think we come into this, you know, I think some people who, you know, want to come into counseling think that there's, you know, like there's this whole professional side of it, right? Instead of it being personal. And I think that's where I try to balance that out with, like, you know, there is that professional side, but also at the same time, like, I genuinely am curious about your life, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's because, like, I'm just, you know, I'm, I've always been interested in other people's human experiences and human behaviors, and I really want to know who they are as a person. You know, even like when somebody talks to me about, you know, what their job is, you know, like I'm so excited to hear that. I like to hear other people's, you know, lives and what they do and like, you know, how they experience it. And even within, you know, even within the sense of talking about it, you know, in terms of, I guess, the addiction side of things and how they try to balance that out. Like I try to be like, you know, like, you know, you're not the only one who's really experiencing this, right? You know, and like there's others who want to be there to help you, you know? And so that's, I guess that's part of that too, is just finding, you know, that we're so curious with that human experience that we want to know, how can we help you? You know, instead of like, you know, sitting there and being like, well, you owe 130 for this session, you know, let's continue next week, right? That doesn't really seems very like disingenuous. So it's just like, you know, I kind of save that stuff for, you know, if they do bring it up, then we'll talk about it, you know, and like, you know, even within the consultation, I try to do that, but it's just being genuinely curious about their experience.
It sounds like your practice of curiosity is built on that foundation of relational mm-hmm. connection. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, you as a human in front of me actually matters so much. I want to know you. Can you show yourself? Can you be here more as you get to share who you are with me? And when I think about the role of self-actualization and how we need relationships for that to form, mm-hmm. it sounds like there's something really corrective available in you mirroring back them rediscovering who they are from mm-hmm. your curiosity. It mm-hmm. sounds like that bottom-up approach, working in the body at a somatic level, you're rewiring this narrative about themselves through your interest.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And it's so nice to hear that, you know, some of these clients will mirror back some of those things of like, you know, you've really helped me. You've really helped me, you know, find a better sense of how I'm able to cope outside of, you know, working in therapy and everything. And, you know, I'm able to provide them with some challenges and some homework for them to take with them. And, you know, and they really appreciate that, because then, you know, it's, you know, if you're able to work on this outside of therapy, that's where you see the real change. You know, you can come in and talk to me for an hour and we can discuss things and I can provide some educational tools, or like, if you're having a hard day, let's talk about it. But outside of therapy is where you see that most change, because, you know, you're able to work on things outside of this therapy space, you know, and, you know, I'm only with you an hour out of your week, you know? So like, how are you able to, with the rest of the hours that you spend throughout your week, how are you able to continue that journey for yourself?
Yeah. I love this statement that therapy is a dress rehearsal for life. And so if we are talking about undoing aloneness and recreating belonging and letting that heal our sense of relationship with ourselves, so we don't need these maladaptive, external, impulsive behaviors.
You
encountering them with the curiosity and safety and relational attunement you are is actually helping them find more sense of belonging and self in the real world outside that hour that we have for mm-hmm. with them.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's like I said, it's so cool to see the change. Like it's even as, you know, even only been in practice for 3 or 4 years, like seeing clients just like come to you for, you know, whatever it may be. It's just nice to hear that they're, you know, like, you really helped me, or thank you,
yeah.
you know, and that's, and I love hearing that. That's, I think that's my favorite part of therapy, is them thanking you for just like providing that support and that space to just open up.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, lets you know you're doing something right.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is there anything along, I mean, there's so many more questions, but I'm aware of our time. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you think would be beneficial to the conversation, or just something burgeoning inside that wants to be shared?
Yeah, I think porn addiction and sex addiction is very stuffed and it's not talked about a lot.
Yes.
And I want to be able to talk about that more. And I thank you for, you know, thank you for being able for me to be able to speak up about that, because this is really like a huge issue for a lot of people. And especially in people who are in relationships and don't know how to express how they can express their healthy sexuality. And, you know, it really is just this, you know, this niche that I have as a sex addiction therapist. I'm just so, you know, I'm so glad to be able to work with the clients that I have. And I want to be able to provide that more for people. But I'm even saying to, you know, to you and your listeners, is that, mm-hmm. you know, just, you know, being able to open up, it's hard, but that first step is just connecting with that therapist who's going to help you, or that person, not even just, you know, a therapist who is going to help you, you know. And I want to be able to provide, like, and I work with multiple addictions as well. So I want to be able to, you know, provide that help for people who need it.
Thank you so much for saying that. I think that's one of the essences of this podcast, is to remind us of the inherent goodness around every single individual human. Mm-hmm. And when I think about what keeps us from that and the role that shame has in making us feel a deep sense of disconnection, mm-hmm. to normalize and bring into light the things that societally we keep hidden in the dark corners actually is revolution. It's actually light in places that won't let shame grow. And so thank you for coming on and letting us hold the container, for saying this is actually a real common form of self-soothing. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we could put a bunch of different words of the ways that sex addiction shows up in helping people get their needs met in a way that is serving them in some way. And when it's no longer serving relationships and self that feels good and nourishing, there's options around how to safely get support, safely get those needs met in different ways, and start to bring light into the fact that it doesn't make you bad. It doesn't make you unworthy of love and belonging. And in fact, on the other end of moving through this, I think you'll find access to that in a deeper way than you would have before. And it gets to start with having conversations, or maybe listening to the normalization of this being part of society and a sign of the collective trauma that we're all living out of right now.
Definitely.
Thank you for doing the work you're doing and bringing your expertise here and letting my listeners get exposed to this realm of therapy in a way that maybe before they didn't have access to.
Yeah. And thank you for having me. I'm so grateful to be able to talk with you. And, you know, you and I have this good relationship that we've had for, you know, I think probably since, like, what, 2020 or 2020?
Yeah.
I can't remember when we, you know, it's been a good relationship. And I feel like, you know, being connected like this is just so cool. Right. And so thank you for having me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We'll have you on again. And where can my listeners find you and what you're doing in the world? After this.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, maybe like most therapists, you can find me on Psychology Today, as Davis Wiggs, or Between the Vines Counseling. You can find me on Instagram, Between the Vines Counseling, on TikTok as BTV Counseling, and also on Facebook as Between the Vines Counseling as well.
Between the Vines Counseling. We'll have all those links in the show notes for easy access. And thank you for joining us, Davis. I hope all our listeners enjoyed this conversation. I'm feeling like I need to go find a course on sex therapy right now. I'm feeling very motivated for more training, which is my favorite state to be. And we'll talk again soon.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. I'm looking forward to it.
As we come to the end of this episode, I want to take a moment to express my deepest gratitude to you, our wonderful listeners. It feels like a profound privilege to take up space in your awareness. Your support means the world to us, and it's because of your curiosity and openness that this podcast is possible. A big thank you to our guests for sharing their wisdom and insights with us all today. If their words resonated with you, I encourage you to look them up on social media or find their website. I also want to extend my gratitude to Jonathan Kiddo for his unwavering support and dedication to producing this podcast. And to all of you tuning in, if you've enjoyed what you've heard, please consider leaving a rating or review. It truly helps in this podcast world. Remember, the journey of deconstruction doesn't end here. Stay curious, stay connected, and join us next time for another episode of Deconstruction.